Okay, good morning. I want to invite everyone, all our visitors and friends and church members. Thank you for worshiping with us and worshiping God with us. It's always awesome when you can come to church and kind of just sing your hearts out. I love that. And one of the things I said, if you had no voice, if you had no tongue, how would you do it? I mean, it's going to require some dancing, so I think one time what we should do is just nobody sing except the praise and worship. The rest of you just guys have to dance. I think that would be kind of cool. I mean, I'd get into that. So, I mean, I'm just saying. God says he can make rocks and trees praise his name. And they don't have voices. They don't have tongues. So it's really good. A couple announcements. The first one's not really an announcement. I want to thank... I think it was like Malin and Shar and Dana and Liz's small groups for the church picnic last night. You guys put a ton of work into that. Man, it was a great time. Really enjoyed it. For those of you who weren't there, you missed out. I ate your sausage for you. I ate a bunch. But it was really good. And just thank you guys for doing that, for putting that on. I know it was a lot of work. I do have one thing. I need some volunteers. September 10th, we are doing the Amish Country Half Marathon in Berlin. And every year, we put this marathon on, a half marathon on, to raise funds for Pure Gift of God. It's an adoption advocacy group. And we need some volunteers for running our food tent. There's a couple people who have done it here at church. If you want to do it again, I'm going to have a sign-up sheet in the back. Just put your name down. I need to get some names and numbers down. It's work. I'm not going to lie to you there, but it's an engaging thing. You get to engage with a bunch of runners, engage with people from church. Basically, you're just going to be passing out food, kind of keep making sure the food tent stays stocked. You get a free T-shirt, and usually probably doesn't take much more than your Saturday morning. So if you're interested in that, you have questions about it, come talk to me or sign up there in the back. Okay, let's get into our message this morning. How are we doing in our Bible reading? Like, remember we started out the year and we had a bunch of Bibles we passed out, and now we're kind of getting to this, you know, we're getting into September, and this is when it, like, you have to dig down deep, and you're like, you're probably, maybe if you're a couple days behind, maybe you're a week behind, maybe you're a month behind, maybe 2 months behind. How are people doing? Are we still reading somewhat in our Bible reading? Yeah, there's not a lot of hands going up. This is not good. Anyway, I don't want to shame you or anything. I mean, that's something. But it is difficult to, like, on a daily basis, like, just be in there and reading. And I struggle a little bit on the reading side. So for me, I do a lot of listening on the Bible app. I kind of go through that and do listening. I drive quite a bit, so to and from work and things like that. So I want us to keep making sure we're getting into the Bible. And I was thinking about this on Friday. I was at this symposium, and it had an MC. And a friend of mine, Dan Awalabi, and he gets up there and he presents the next speaker. Whoever the next speaker was going to be, Dan presented that. And I thought about this a little bit. When we were showing up at this event, we're not coming there to hear, to listen to the MC. We're not listening to Dan Awalabi. We came to listen to that speaker. And preaching is kind of like that. And Steve might agree with me. I don't know. Like, you're not here to come listen to Joe. You're not, when Steve's preaching, you're not coming here to listen to Steve. You're coming here to listen to God. That's who you're supposed to be coming to listen to. We're just the presenter. We're trying to present the way there. That's what our job is. That's what we're supposed to do. And what you need to do is, as on a personal level, reading the Bible, getting in and studying the Word, that's what you have to do personally. I can't get you past that certain point. I can present the Word, I can present the Bible, but it's on you to start reading, to dig in, to understand that. And take it to another level. So I was thinking about that, and some of that stuff, when you're reading the Bible, there's passages you come across that don't make sense, right? Or there's verses you read that you just sit there and shake your head and, like, that's just some crazy stuff. I can't even believe that's in the Bible. And so what I want to talk about a little bit today is when it doesn't make sense, okay? When it doesn't make sense, when you're reading something, and not that it doesn't make sense in the fact that I don't understand these verses, but maybe when you start to look at these verses and you can't believe that they're just so crazy and they're so far out there that you're like, what was God even thinking when he had somebody write that down? Are you following with me a little bit there? Like, you know, it's not like some verses are hard to understand. They are. They're, you know, you got to study deep in them. But I'm not really talking about those verses. The verses that I'm going to focus on today are some of the verses that don't make sense just because, like, we can read them and we're like, why was that ever written? And so we're going to tackle that a little bit because I know if you've read any parts of your Bible, especially the first part of the year when you're going through like Exodus and Leviticus and some of those verses, like you're sitting there shaking your head thinking this is, somebody was on a lot of caffeine and they didn't really, you know, maybe understand, they shouldn't have written that down. So a story that came to my mind, I just was recently reading about it, was Hezekiah. He was this king, one of the godly kings that was in the Old Testament. And he got sick. It doesn't really go into a lot of detail of what he was sick with. He had some kind of inflammation or boils on his body. But the prophet Isaiah came to him, and this is kind of, I mean, I think if I was sick and I was going to die, it would be kind of nice to have a prophet show up at my house and say, hey, you know what, get your house in order, you're going to die. It would be a little disconcerting because, you know you're going to die, you're not just going to get better, it's not a common cold. But Isaiah showed up and said, look, you got to get ready. And Hezekiah's like, man, I'm not ready to die. I'm enjoying life, I'm a king, things are going well. He was doing a lot of good things. And so he prayed to God and asked God to heal him. So he begged God, he pleaded with God, he said, you know, heal me. And not only did he ask God to heal him, he said, God, I want you to show me a sign. Show me something that you know, that you are listening, that you are hearing me. And so the prophet Isaiah came back. He had this kind of personal messenger that would just show up, come back and forth. And Isaiah would show up and said, you know what, God heard your prayers, Hezekiah. He said he listened, he heard your prayers. And what he's going to do is he's going to set the sundial back. They didn't have clocks back then, they had sundials, but he's going to reverse the sundial about 10 degrees. He's going to back that up. Now, I'm reading these verses and I'm like, first of all, Hezekiah, that's pretty gutsy to be like, not only do you pray to God and say, heal me, but then like, show me a sign that you're going to heal me. You know, I'm just at the stage of prayer where I'm like, God, you know, I'm just praying basic prayers at this point. I'm not praying for healing right now, but this is Hezekiah. He gets right in there. And so God reverses time, moves the sun back, and says, you know what? I'm going to add 15 more years onto your life. Pretty impressive, right? I mean, Hezekiah's got this connection with God. And so that happens, and then Hezekiah recovers. And this king over in Babylon hears about that his counter king, his other king that rules another country, he sends an ambassador from Babylon over, and he hangs out with Hezekiah, and Hezekiah's like, he's showing off all his wealth. And it says there's some verse in the Bible that says, you know, after he showed off his wealth, the Lord was displeased with Hezekiah because he was vain. And he sent Isaiah the prophet to him again, and Isaiah says to him, you know, because you did this, I'm not going to send destruction. I'm going to have peace during your time. In your 15 years, it's going to be cool. But when you die, your children are going to get carried away into captivity by Babylon. And so you read these verses and you're like, does God just sit up there and like, does he listen to this person over here and answer this prayer and does this sign over here for this person? Like, what is going on here? Kind of crazy stuff. And then there's a story about Abraham arguing with God. Remember, and this is another verse that just kind of, I mean, we read it, and it says exactly what's happening. It says, and God heard about the sin that was happening in Sodom and Gomorrah, so he decided to come down and check it out. And I was reading that verse, and I was like, God's not just up in heaven knowing what's going on. He has to come down and check it out. Now, you read those verses, and you're thinking, that kind of doesn't make sense. But that's what the Bible says. It says he came down, and Abraham, he started conversing with Abraham, and Abraham's like, he heard he was going to Sodom and Gomorrah. He kind of told him what he was going to do. And Abraham starts arguing with God and says, or negotiating, not really arguing, he says negotiating. He said, what about if there's 50 righteous people in Sodom? You know, are you going to still destroy the city? And God's like, well, no, I'm not going to if there's 50. And then he goes, well, what about 40? Or no, I think he went 45. He's going by fives. He said, what about if there's 45 people? And God said, no, I won't destroy him if there's 45. And then he goes, what about, 30? And then Abraham's smart now because he's negotiating. Now suddenly he starts going by tens. He said, what if there's 20? And then he said, what if there's 10? And that said at that point that God left him. And Abraham and God departed and went their ways. And you're reading this stuff and it's like, did that actually happen? That just seems so crazy. Like that God came down and was talking with Abraham and negotiating about saving these people. So we read stories like that. And this is where we start to wrestle. Like when we're reading the Bible, is that, we kind of question like what was going on there? What was happening? And sometimes the stuff in the Bible doesn't make sense to us on a human level. In our rationale and our thinking, we're reading that and it's just like, we've read the story a bunch of times, but like God and Abraham just negotiating how many people get saved. And it's weird. It's the strange parts in our Bible and it's hard for us to understand. But over and over again in the Bible, over and over again, about every time, we see that God is incredibly faithful, but he's not always predictable. He's incredibly faithful, but he's not always predictable. So if you can't figure God out, or if you're sitting here thinking, I just don't understand this, I'm going to have some verses for you. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Isaiah 55, and this is kind of going to be our key passage today. Hopefully this helps us understand kind of why we don't understand some of this stuff, if that makes sense. It's a little bit of a paradox, we kind of understand that what we don't understand is really what we're going to try to get to. So Isaiah 55, and we're going to jump in at verses 8 and 9, but before this it's kind of talking about what God does for us. It says he does all kinds of, like, the glory that is given to God. And then we jump in here in Isaiah 55, 8, 9. It says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens, and he follows this up, first of all, he's like, okay, you're not thinking on the same level that I'm thinking, and you're not doing things on the same level that I'm doing things. But then he follows it up just to kind of give a little bit of a clarified description. He goes, for as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So now that starts to make a little bit more sense, right? Because I'm sitting here thinking, if I'm not thinking on the same level of God, well, of course some of this stuff doesn't make sense. God turning back the sun and healing Hezekiah, give him 15 more years, that God's thinking is different than mine. Like I'm going to have a light bulb moment. So I was trying to think, like, how do we illustrate that? How do we, wrap our minds around something like that? So, we would all here consider ourselves pretty smart people, right? I mean, look at you. You guys look smart. You're out there, and you always kind of say you're smart, right? Everybody kind of, nobody's here volunteering and saying they're dumb, right? We're all kind of smart. Who do you think the smartest person in the room here is? Anybody think, who's the smartest person in the room? We have any? Anybody want to volunteer to be the smartest person in the room? I mean, you don't have to be shy about this. I mean, it's kind of an honor, Hey, Craig, I think Craig's a very smart guy. Yeah, I would say he's a very intelligent person. Now, there's people that are very smart, Steve, he's a smart person, intelligent person. There's a bunch of people that are really smart here. Now, I was trying to think, is there a baby in there? There's some babies here. I hear them every so often. Vernon and Karen, they just had a baby. If you look at Craig, and I'm not picking on you I'm picking on you because Tim pointed you out, so get back at him. that's a way to get out of that, right? So let's look at the difference between Craig and the baby. Like, there's a giant gap there, right? Everybody's going to agree that there's just a monumental difference. I mean, that baby can't, beautiful baby. Vernon and Karen did a great job there. But the baby at the level that the baby's at and where Craig's at is just a vast difference. I mean, it's not even on the same page. Craig can do, complex math problems. He can ride a motorcycle. He can hunt. He can do all this kind of stuff. And that baby just kind of lies there and cries and, occasionally sleeps and poops and does that, baby stuff. But just not even on the same level. I think that's just a little tiny, I mean, I don't even think that's close, but I think that's just a tiny little picture there of what God thinks about and what we think about. God's thinking on an entirely different level. In fact, it's like on a different stratosphere. You know, he says, as far as the heavens are high above the earth, that's the difference in my thoughts. And this distance shouldn't really discourage us from seeking after God. I don't want to think, okay, there's this huge gap. I'm going to get discouraged thinking about that. But it should actually humble us as we seek to understand who God is. Because, you know, I, in a rational point of view, or from my own point of view, I don't understand God. I don't know how he operates. And the simple answer is we can't understand the creator of the universe. We can't get a grasp on how God thinks because his thoughts are different than ours. You know, I used that illustration. The other thing I was thinking about, there's this really large gap between that and God's thoughts. When he's thinking about things, he also sees the big picture. God sees, like, we're looking down here and we're kind of in the moment. We're kind of living our lives. We're there. But God's looking at this. He's seeing history. He's seeing the history before us. He's seeing the history after us. And he's making decisions based off of that. And, you know, sometimes the decisions, or sometimes the stories we read in the Bible, are just really strange and weird. And people have just different tastes, right? We all have different, I like oysters. I don't know. How many people here like oysters? Like raw oysters? I have Steve up here. Anybody else like raw oysters, like on the half shell, chilled with a little bit of like hot sauce and some horseradish? You guys are not living. Seriously, nobody likes oysters. Well, I have this little restaurant down in Orlando. Every time I travel to Orlando, I hit this place up. It's like a concrete, it's like a trough. And they give you a big bucket of oysters and somebody's shucking them for you and they just hand them to you. And as fast as they can shuck, I eat them. And they're just delicious. On the other scale, I used to have a great aunt. Her name was Aunt Sarah. And she would have these licorice candies, okay, that had these little beads on the top. I don't see them as much anymore, but they were the most horrendous candies known to man. In fact, they should never have been called candies because they were not candies. But they were licorice, and it seemed like older people always had this little bowl of them sitting on her table. And she'd be like passing them out. Here, do you want? Nobody took them. They were terrible. And I think they're called all sorts candy. I looked them up online because I thought there's no way people still make them. And so they do. They sell them, and they're expensive. There's a vast difference between raw oysters and that licorice candy, right? There's a vast difference there. I can't understand the person over here that's eating that licorice candy. You're weird to me. I'm just telling you. And I'm seeing a lot of you looking up here and thinking, Joe, you're pretty weird by eating raw oysters. So we're just not on the same page. Sometimes, and that might not have been the greatest example, but I think sometimes that's a little bit between us and God. We're not on the same page. We're not in the same. God's over here doing something that's so totally different than what we can think about. We're not on the same wavelength at all. So that's when we're going to come to Exodus 32. So I've been reading through the Bible and studying, kind of leading up to this, and this is what actually triggered my thinking when it comes to, like, sometimes it doesn't make sense. And these are the verses we're going to tackle. And so just to give you a little bit of a history here, we're going to jump in a little bit ahead of Exodus 32, and it's when God called Moses up onto Mount Sinai. And so if you remember this, the children of Israel were getting freed from the land of Egypt. They're all excited. They're pumped. They're heading to Canaan. And God, this is just to give you an example how God doesn't think like us. If you look at a map and you say, okay, here's Egypt, here's the promised land over here, there's a really nice road, kind of like, not a road, but a really easy way to get there. Okay, it's like this nice way to travel to the land of Canaan. Does God take them that way? You know, I think sometimes maybe God is, his GPS doesn't work right or something. I don't know. What is he? He takes them smack dab into the Red Sea. Like the place that there's no bridge, there's no ferries, there's nothing. He takes 1.5 million people and stops them right at the edge of the Red Sea. So to Moses, to all the people that are there, they're looking at that and says, God, what on earth are you thinking? I mean, this is just absolute absurd. Like, we should have went way over here, and we could have headed to the, we'd be in the promised land in probably about 2.5-3 months. But God, does he do that? No, right up to the Red Sea. Because he's thinking bigger. His thoughts are higher. His ways are different than we are. And what he did is he opened the waters of the Red Sea. Nobody's seen that one coming, right? The Red Sea had never been parted before. Nobody had that kind of cataloged in their history bank. Led the children of Israel through that, closed up the waters over. He was doing things that were on a totally another level than the people that were being led. So how many times is God taking us through stuff and into stuff that we're sitting here thinking like, God, you're crazy. Like, I don't understand this. It's weird. It's nuts. It doesn't make sense to me. God's like, okay, just, I got this, okay? I got a plan. So anyway, that's kind of the backstory. He's doing this stuff. He takes them up to this Mount Sinai. And this mountain, like, I want to read this a little bit. Exodus 19, verse 14. I'm going to read a couple verses there. Exodus 19, 14. And so Moses went down from the mountain. He's telling God. And this is God coming down on a mountain. So last night we had a pretty amazing thunderstorm, right? Like the lightning was going ballistic. I mean, there was a tornado warning, I think, in Berlin. It was kind of crazy out there. We were driving 250 and heading home from the picnic, and lightning hit a tree right beside the road. This poor car ahead of us was like, you know, just kind of weaved off, and I was like, wow, what do? Crazy stuff. Now, listen to this. It says, this is Exodus 19, starting at verse 16. And it says, on the morning of the third day, there was thunders and lightnings, plural, and thick cloud on the mountain, a very loud trumpet blast, so all the people in the camp trembled. And then Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. Crazy stuff here, right? And they took their stand at the foot of the mountain, and now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. And the smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. And Moses spoke, and God answered him in thunder. It's just crazy stuff. And then the Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. Moses is not asking questions at that point. He's just like, you know what, God, you're yelling at me in thunder. I'm coming up. Okay, so he's up there. He's heading up the mountain. And then the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord to look, and many of them perish. And so this is what it did. And they set limits around the mountain. They said, okay, we can't go close to this place. We got to kind of fence it off. But that's the kind of power that God was showing. He was doing this right in front of them. Okay, so we got that picture, right? God's a massive thunderstorm, probably makes the one last night look pale in comparison, just to give you a reference there. Let's fast forward to chapter 32 here. So Exodus 32, we're going to go. This is about 40 days. Moses has been up in the mountain. God's given him all this stuff. He's writing. He is cramped. You know, he's getting cramps in the left hand. He's switched to the right. You know, God is just laying it out to Moses. He's got all this stuff he has to all these rules, regulations that he's cataloging down. Verse 1 of Exodus 32, it says, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, this man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't even know what has become of him. How quick people forget, right? So we just witnessed like God and all his glory coming down onto a mountain. And what did these people do? They're sitting here like, hey, let's make us, we don't even know what's happening to Moses. Let's make us some other god. And so I'm not going to read it all, but basically Moses or Aaron says, okay, bring me your jewelry, bring me the gold. We're going to fashion a calf. You kind of know this story. They fashioned a calf. They started worshiping it. This was 40 days. Now, 40 days is a bit of a time, like but it's not that long. Moses up in the mountain communing with God. I think that there's still smoke and fire on this mountain. I don't think that went away. But these people went and started to change. And their thoughts were different than God's thoughts. Their ways are different than God's ways. And that's where we are. We don't think the same way God does. We don't do the same thing God does. So they built this calf, and they started worshiping it, and Moses is like, this is in the Bible. This is where, you know, and it says, and God was like up there, and he turned to Moses and said, this is in verse 7, go down, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. He's like, Moses, you know, these people that you brought out, they just lost it. They are worshiping a golden calf. I'm up here trying to give you instructions, and they just went off the deep end. And God said he was very upset. He said, you know what? He talked to Moses and he told him, I'm just going to wipe them out. I'm going to kill them all. It's just not worth it. I did all this stuff for them. I brought them out. I rescued them. I did this stuff. I'm going to kill them. And here we have Moses intercede and begs God. He said, don't do this. Moses started appealing to God's glory. He said, if you do this, if you kill these people, what is everybody else going to say about you? He said, the other nations around are going to say, this is the God that brought the children of Israel out of Egypt and just to kill them out in the desert. How's that going to make you look? So you see, Moses was appealing to God's glory. And he said, don't do it. Kind of reminiscent of Abraham, remember? There's kind of history repeating itself a little bit, where Moses was pleading and said, don't kill these people. It's not going to make you look glorious. So God relented at the disaster he was going to bring on the people. And this is where these verses get hard for us as humans to stomach, because it's strange and it doesn't make sense. And this is what God wanted them to do. And I sometimes wonder, like, if you're a new believer or a new convert and you start to read these verses, you can probably twitch out a little bit. But it says, this is what God told Moses to do. In verse 25 of 32. And it says, and when Moses saw that the people had broke loose, for Aaron had let them break loose to the derision of their enemies, then Moses stood in the gate of the camp, and he said, who is on the Lord's side? Come to me. And the sons of Levi gathered around him, and he said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, put your sword on your side and go to and from gate to gate throughout the camp, each of you. And this is that crazy verse. Kill his brother and his companion and his neighbor. And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses. And that day about 3,000 men of the people fell. I understand that verse, as in I'm reading it and I know what happened. But in another sense, it doesn't make sense to me. Moses directed the people to go out and kill their sons, to kill their neighbors, to kill their companions. And he did it. And what I feel, and this is kind of where it's tough, but I feel that God is more concerned about his glory than he actually is concerned about human life. God is more concerned about his glory. And it's not that God is a narcissistic God or that he's some like being up there, but God actually cares tremendously about his glory. God's focus is on that. And God also loves us very much. We sang about that and he did that, but he loves us so much that he actually wants his glory to be in everything that happens. The purpose of man is to glorify God. And it's probably one of the most precious things. God's love actually keeps God at the center of everything. Do you know that? God's love keeps God at the center. And his love exalts his value and its worth. There's a New Testament story that kind of goes along with this. Let me back up here a little bit. Jesus actually talked about it in Luke 14, 26. It's not maybe in the same context of the harshness of taking a sword out and killing people that had disobeyed God. But it goes along the same lines. It says, Luke 14, 26 says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and children and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. And those are another one of those verses that sometimes to me just don't make sense. How does that compute? What is that looking like? But God is moving at another level. He's actually the author of the book. And we are the characters. Think about this. There's an example that I think Paul gives, and he says, you know what? We're like clay in the hands of the potter. How often does clay look back at the person that's making it and says, you know what? You don't know what you're doing. You don't understand me. You're not getting who I am. I should be something different. I should be something better. No, the potter has complete control of the clay that it's making, and it knows what it's doing. He knows what he's doing. So, our purpose in life is to glorify God and to give him glory. And we can do this in a number of different ways. I have a couple references here. John 14, 13 says this, whatever you ask in my name, and a lot of times we get hung up on this first part of the verse. This is the verse that we love. Whatever you ask in my name, that I will do. And we usually stop there, you know? Whatever you ask in my name, that I will do. Okay, God, I need a new car, and I need, you know, this and that and all this stuff. You know, I need fishing rods and whatever. We forget the last part. It says, whatever you ask in my name, that I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. That the Father may be glorified in the Son. What is that about me, though? Like, how is that? That's nothing about me. I'm just trying to ask God for stuff, and then it says that the Father may be glorified in his Son. When God's answering your prayers, he's not answering them for you. He's not always answering them for you. I think when he answered the prayer of Hezekiah and gave him 15 more years, what is that showing? Isn't that showing you that God is a powerful God who can add 15 years onto your life? Isn't it showing you that God is such a powerful God, he can take the sun and move it backwards 10 degrees? Like, how crazy is that? That's next level thinking. That's thoughts that are higher than my thoughts. That's ways that are higher than my ways. Isn't that amazing? I love serving a God like that. That's a powerful God. Our prayers give God glory. Psalms 50:15. Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. When I'm in trouble, when things are going south, what does it say? Call upon me. Because even in your trouble, even when things are not going well, when you're in trouble, God gets the glory. Because who's going to rescue you? God gets the glory from that. And in fact, it says in Isaiah 43:21, it says, these people I have formed for myself. These people, us, I have formed them for myself. The reason God made you was for himself. He said, I made you for me. And they shall declare my praise. That's what we did here. You being you gives God glory. You being you, living your life, doing what you do, gives God glory. I'm going to wrap it up with a story that's in the Old Testament or in the New Testament. And if you want to see how the God-centeredness of God's love works, and this story is another one of those that I don't totally understand it. I read it and I understand what is being said, but it doesn't always make sense. This is in John 11, 1 through 6. And it says, it's the story of Lazarus. We know this story. Now there was a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So therefore, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer than the place that he was at. So there's a couple things here that are pretty amazing. One of them is, Jesus chose to let Lazarus die. That's kind of amazing. It says, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. And there was no hurry. His intention was not to spare the family grief. And we'd be thinking here at this point, God, you know, like, Jesus needs to hurry up and get there to do the healing because he could save them. But he didn't want to do the healing. He wanted to do the raising from the dead. He was motivated by a passion for the glory of God, and he displayed that by his own glorious power. When he raised Lazarus from the dead, it was an unbelievable display of power. He said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. And then the last one, it says, nevertheless, both the decision to let Lazarus die and the motivation to magnify God was actually a beautiful expression of God's love for Mary and Martha and Lazarus. He actually expressed his love because it says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so he stayed with where he was, John 11, 5. Many people today would look at that story, and I imagine even Christians would look at that story and would say, Jesus was pretty calloused for letting Lazarus die. He was pretty harsh about that. But if, you know, he let Mary and Martha go through those days of pain, through that agony of losing a brother. And if they saw that what really motivated Jesus, what motivated him to come, was that he was going to give and magnify the glory of God, it would have made perfect sense. But when we're living in those moments, when we're actually in the trenches, when we're in the, you know, where the rubber hits the road, we don't understand that. We don't understand the big picture of what God is doing. And we can't tell God what love is, but God is the very essence of love. And he understands us. He absolutely loves us 100%. And this is where I want to end, that actually, love is doing whatever actually you need to do. And this is what Jesus exemplified by going to the cross. Jesus loved you so much, he actually went to the cross to save you. He did that, and that doesn't make sense. In fact, in Roman times, the gospel of Jesus Christ did not make sense at all. In Roman times, dying on a cross was probably the worst possible death as far as not only in agony and pain, but it was also the worst possible death as far as the stigma attached to it. You were a common criminal when you were hung on a cross. It was something that was, there was shame involved, there's a lot of things. And Romans 5:8 says that God demonstrated his own love to us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's crazy. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to my human thinking. 1 Corinthians 1:18 says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." It's foolishness. It doesn't make sense. Why would an all-powerful God send his son down to save you? On our level and our thinking, that doesn't make sense. And to the world, that doesn't make sense. And in fact, in Roman mythology, a god who was weak was one that kind of would have, like, this picture where God, like, lowered himself to humanity would have been a weak god. He'd have been a god that you'd have looked at and said, you know what, that's not a god that I wanted to follow in Roman mythology. In fact, when Paul was writing this, he said the word foolishness, our English word foolishness, is actually the Greek word for moron. It's like it's moronic. It doesn't even compute. It's something stupid. People laugh at it. But when you realize the way to be saved is the best decision that you're ever going to make, everything starts to make sense. When you realize that the way of the cross is the way to get saved, everything starts to click. And we start to understand what God was doing. We are to start to understand a little bit of how he was thinking. And he does it in a way that's completely different than what you anticipate. It doesn't always make sense because God's thoughts are different than your thoughts. On Friday night, I was driving to a football game out in East Canton and cruising down Route 30 and where it merges up into 77 there's all that construction. And I was driving and the car ahead of me just really started braking. And I noticed that, and so I'm like, I'm going to swerve over to the left and get around him. Well, just as I was going to make the left turn, I noticed a motorcycle come flying up along to the left, and I had to stay in my lane. Slammed on the brakes and ran smack dab into a vehicle that was in front of me. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I got a football game to get to. It was a perfect Friday night. I mean, everything was going so well, and here I'm like running into the back of some lady's VW Passat. And I was like, you know, come on, God. You know, what's going on? Why is this happening? I have places to go. And I started thinking, because I've been studying about this, I'm like, God, where are you getting glory out of this? Where is this making anything? It doesn't make sense to me. But my thinking is right at the moment of the accident, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking. It's inconveniencing me. It's making me late for something. It's this. Maybe God wanted me to witness the lady in front of her. I didn't do that. But maybe the insurance adjuster that's coming out on Monday, who's going to look at my car, maybe God wants me to talk to her about something. Maybe God was trying to just tell me to slow down and just take life a little slower, not try to be in a hurry. Maybe he was trying to wake me up. I don't know what it was. But God's thoughts are different than mine, and his ways are different than mine. And I don't always understand it. And I think sometimes when we come to these verses, we have to realize that God is working behind the scenes and he has a different plan. And I don't see it. Maybe I'm not going to see this. Maybe this was just circumstances that I was driving too fast or not paying attention or following too close. Maybe it's just life. But what I do know is that God thinks differently than I do. And I have to accept it because he's God and I'm not. Let's stand for prayer. Dear God, I just want to come before you right now and thank you so much for being an awesome, powerful God that does love me, that does take care of me. Even when I don't understand things, you see the big picture. And you've seen this picture that, you know, when your son Jesus came down and died on the cross, you've seen 2,000 years later, you've seen us here at Christian Life, and you've seen us living life, and you loved us. And you offered a way of escape for us, dear God. And if there's someone here that has not put their faith and trust in you, dear God, I just pray for that person that they would come to know you, that they would see the amazing escape route that you have made. Thank you, God, that you are a bigger God than I can than I can imagine. I love you, and dear God, just bless our church. Give us a desire to grow closer to you and reading the word and understanding you better. We ask this all in your name. Amen.